Welcome, bet riders around the world. My name is Gary Solomon, and you're watching the Laid Back Bike Report. It is great to have y'all with us today. Let me tell you what we've got going in today's webcast. We are going to kick it off, as usual, with our pal Hans Agala with the recumbent news. Then we have a report from TerraTrike. They got a new version of one of their trikes called the GTS, and they submitted a video for us to have a look at that. Then our first featured guest is Marco Ruga. Marco's been on a number of times before, always a favorite, always glad to have him on. He has got a very interesting and unusual direction for this new build of his, an off-road recumbent. What do you see that? Alex Dupre is a guy from the UK who is working on a tilting trike, working towards a velomobile type of situation. He actually was going to be with us live. He's got some technical difficulties, but we do have a video that I recorded with him earlier, so we'll let you see that and a couple of slides to go with it. He is on the live chat, so we'll be able to talk to him in that manner. Let's see, Doug Davis, of course, back with another of his unusual and amazing road fixes. We're going to take a look at that. Jonathan Garcia let me know about his new Metabike Mystique, an amazing two-wheeler recumbent that he's going to show us via video. We have our pal Joseph Janning is back with one of our team reviews, and he's going to take a look at some velomobile wheels that I think you'll be interested in looking at. Let's see, Mickey O'Brien, our pal from Laid Back Cycles out in California, is going to review the Ice Sprint X Tour, an electrified version of that. I think you're going to really enjoy that review. And Denny and Larry are going to be here with a sports report with some updated information on a couple of events that happened recently. So stick with us to see that. All right, let's take a look at who is on our crew today. Pop them up there. There we go. So directing us today in good hands, it's Larry Seidman from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hiya, Larry.
Hi, Gary. Welcome aboard, everybody.
And it's good to have you down in Jackson, Mississippi, where it always seems to be storming. It is storming Trey Burgoyne. Hey, Trey.
Howdy, folks. How y'all doing?
And Trey, of course, handles our media. As mentioned earlier, out in the Czech Republic, we have Hans Agala, our news director. Hey, Hansa.
Hi, good to be here.
It's good to have you. And Mr. Wizard, Doug Davis from Dallas, Texas, Bicycle Evolution. Doug, glad to have you
here. Good to have you here. It's raining here, too. I think Mississippi's not got the exclusive on it anymore.
Might be sliding over your way. All right. And our sports director, of course, earlier mentioned, Denny Voorhees, back in Sayre, Pennsylvania. Hey, Denny.
Hey, how you doing? Good to be back.
Good to have you back. And Champaign Urbana is where we're going to find our pal Nina Paley with us again today on the panel. Hi, Nina.
Howdy. I got drizzled on my ride this morning.
Okay. That's not a deluge, but were you in the Mango?
No, I was on my tie rush.
Okay. So even drizzling makes a difference on that, I guess. So, all right. Great to have you with us too, Nina. So folks, let's talk a little bit about live chat. It's an integral part of what we do every month. If you are interested in interacting with either your fellow viewers or our panel or one of our guests, you can do that via live chat. If you're on YouTube, there's a live chat window right next to the view screen. And if you are on Facebook, you just comment like you would on any other Facebook post. So engage in that live chat. Let us know that you're watching and let us know where you're watching from. I'll try to pop those up on the screen as the show goes on. All right. How about supporting the Laid Back Bike Report? So if you like what we do here, we work very hard to produce a show for you every month that you guys will be interested in and maybe watch during the month. Please help us out by liking us on YouTube. You can also like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube. There's an applause button right down over here on YouTube. And if you want to click that little white eye up there, you'll be taken right to our website. You can find out a lot more about what we do there and how else you can help us. Thumbs up if you can. That's always good. And please help us out. Be a Patreon supporter for as little as a dollar a month. And you could see some of the guys that have done that up to now. So we always appreciate that sort of support. Thanks. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the wonderful sponsors of the Laid Back Bike Report. First of all, TerraCycle, makers of exquisite recumbent parts and accessories for your bent. And Trailside Trikes, a fine recumbent trike shop on the Withlacoochee Trail in Florida and also in Knoxville, Tennessee. And Cruise Bike, designed for the cyclist who wants to ride farther, climb faster, and adventure more. All Cruise Bikes and frame sets ship free in the USA. And TerraTrike Green Speed, the best in leisure performance, adventure, touring, electric, and portability. Wherever your adventure leads, TerraTrike will take you there. And Greenspeed, where Ian Sims designs bring performance through science and engineering. And Laid Back Cycles, the top USA dealer for TerraTrike and the premier source for CatTrike, Ice, and Greenspeed. We give you the freedom to ride. And Recumbent CycleCon, please join us at the 2021 Recumbent CycleCon trade show and convention, which will be held on October 9th and 10th at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Dayton, Ohio. More information at recumbentcyclecon.com. All right, guys, let's kick it all off as we usually do with Hans Agala's news report. So, Larry, let's have a look at that report.
Hello, everybody. Hans Agala from recumbent.news here. For a long time, I've been dreaming about my recumbent news being captured while I am riding my recumbent. So here I am, and I hope it will be good enough so I can release the video. So here are some news from the last month, some recumbent news. Two of them, you will hear more about them during the show, during the Laid Back Bike Report show. It is the Metabike Mystic, designed by Jonathan Garcia from Roasted Recumbent Cycles, which I like a lot. The second one is the off-road version, off-road long wheelbase, designed by Italian Marco Ruga, and I like his attempt a lot. And the third news is the Cruise Bike S40, the new edition for 2021. They introduced it just recently. It is a performance bike with dynamic boom. You can pre-order it already, and so if you like this concept of recumbents, it is worth seeing it. You know that I am a fan of cycling on solar-powered electric bikes, electric recumbents, and so I have to mention that the 2021 edition of the SunTrip, which is the unsupported most known race of solar bikes, is about to start in middle June. The participants will ride only in Europe this time. And the prologue going from Lyon, France to Brussels, Belgium has started already. So here are some pictures from it. And I think it is worth following it because there are quite some recumbents there. And many of them are nicely designed, nicely constructed, and it is simply an interesting event. And that's it from me today. I wish you a great laid-back bike report and nice recumbent rides, same as I have today, riding home from work. So have a good day. Bye.
There we go. There's Hansa in person. Hansa, so that was a departure. That was something new for you to try to do your report while riding, which I thought was great. You sounded a little bit out of breath. Were you mostly uphill during that? Or?
Oh, no. But if you try it, you realize that you are always a little bit out of breath. But that was Friday, not today. I always have to prepare the video some days ahead because I'm not sure whether I will be able to attend on, for me, Sunday evening.
Of course, of course. All right, so Hansa actually had a few other things to say about Marco and Alex. But he's going to be with us here, and Hansa, I think it'll be more appropriate as we get those segments going, and we'll bring you back in for your comments and thoughts on that, if that'd be okay.
Yeah, sure. Maybe about the sun trip. I did have already a nice article, I think last week or the week before, about a very unique tilting solar-powered trike on the recumbent.news, and I am about to publish few more articles about different topics of solar powered cycling, let's say recumbent cycling. So if you are interested in that part of cycling, you can follow the recumbent.news, and you will hear more about it.
And there you go, Room 360 asking specifically if there'll be a show on the solar event. So I'm guessing maybe Hansa will keep us updated on the event after it's done. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how it came off and that sort of thing. So great. Thank you for that question. Let me see. Here's a nice little from Bavaria. They love the idea of you reporting on the fly. So. Very good. Thank you, Kurt. That's great. Okay, Hansa, thanks so much for the report. We will have you back on here shortly, I'm sure. And I think we're going to move on to the next segment here if we could then. So thanks. Yeah. All right. Okay. So, all right. Next up, folks, as I mentioned, we had the news from Marshall at TerraTrike told me about the new GTS, and he wanted to, he asked if they could make a video and tell us a little bit about this a new iteration, and we have that for you right now. So, Larry, let's see the TerraTrike GTS.
Hey, Gary, JC here from TerraTrike. Hello to all your viewers. Thanks for having us on the Laid Back Report today. And I speak for all of us here at TerraTrike when I say we're incredibly excited and happy that the riding season is in full swing. I know here we just went out for a ride at Riverside Park, and along with us we brought this trike here. This is our brand new TerraTrike GTS. It's the latest TerraTrike model that we're bringing to the market, and it really pushes the envelope with several new developments throughout the whole trike. And really our goal with the GTS was to create the ultimate touring experience, a ride that you could take out on the trail, go for a nice long all-day ride, and know that you're going to be comfortable and confident the entire time. So I'm going to take some time today to just kind of walk through some of the new features and cool things that we have going on the GTS. The first thing you might notice here is the new TerraTrike Sport Touring seat. Again, this seat was designed with that touring mindset in mind, and we really were going for the perfect balance of comfort and performance. So you'll see here that the seat is made out of a nice, lightweight, breathable mesh fabric. That fabric is going to keep you cool on the trail your whole ride. There's a nice cutout section here that's going to let some airflow come through. And that mesh is tied to the seat frame, which is made out of a nice lightweight aluminum. So that aluminum is going to be very lightweight, keeping your total weight down, and is also nice and rigid and comfortable. You'll also notice towards the back here, we have a new adjustable shoulder section. And what that is going to allow you to do is you're going to be able to adjust that section to your shoulder area and really create a nice custom fit for you and the trike. Again, just ensuring that you're going to stay nice and comfortable on the trail when you're out on your long ride. You'll also notice towards the back our new wishbone seat stays connecting the seat to the frame. The new seat stays there were really designed to, again, help improve the stability and the overall handling of the trike. Moving on to the frame itself of the GTS, the frame is made out of a 7000 series aluminum, which is a nice lightweight material, which is just another factor that's gonna help you keep pushing down the trail for longer and longer on those long touring rides. You'll also notice towards the back section, we've incorporated our rear triangle design, which really serves two cool purposes. Firstly, it is a perfect solution for mounting all kinds of storage bags back there. So you can hook your bags on, your panniers, you can load those up with all the gear you're gonna need for your all day ride, and they'll stay nice and secure back there. Another thing it does is it really improves the overall rigidity of the frame and allowing for the greatest power transfer possible. So with every pedal stroke you're putting out, you're knowing that that's efficient as possible and is going to carry you down the road farther and farther than ever before. We've also outfitted the GTS with a host of really cool components. First at the back, you'll notice Shimano SLX shifters. The GTS is a 22 speed, so those SLX shifters are going to give you perfect control over that gearing, and it's going to help you as you conquer various terrain, whether you're conquering a hill or trying to gain some speed. You're going to have perfect control as you shift into different gears. And then up front here, we have a Shimano 105 crank set. And then at your fingertips here, we have Shimano Dior hydraulic brakes, which are incredibly clean, incredibly smooth, incredibly quick brakes that we absolutely love using. Where the rubber meets the road, we have Schwalbe Triker tires up front and a Schwalbe Marathon tire in the rear. We absolutely love these tires because, again, they really hit that perfect balance of performance, comfortability, and kind of utility. These can take you down any trail or maybe even a little bit of rough terrain. Because we know when you're out on the trail for that all-day ride, you're going to encounter all kinds of terrain and obstacles. And with these tires, we're very confident that they're going to take you through anything you might come across. And those are laced into here, our custom TerraTrike hubs. So overall, just a great wheel set paired with a great tire that we think will be absolutely perfect for those all-day rides. Overall, our goal with the GTS, as said, was to create the ultimate touring experience for the rider. And with all of the great Shimano components we've packed in, the lightweight frame, this awesome new sport touring seat, we really feel we accomplished that. So for the rider that's looking to go out on an all-day ride or squeeze all your gear into your storage bags and do an overnight, you can feel confident that this trike is going to perfectly carry you through your next adventure. So I just want to say thanks again, Gary, for having us on, and thanks to all your viewers for tuning in and helping maintain and support this awesome community of recumbent riders. If you want to try the GTS out yourself, these will be arriving at our dealers very soon. So you can hop on our website. We have a dealer locator there, so you can find a shop near you and give it a try for yourself. And myself and our marketing director, Marshall Randall, will be in the live chat. If you guys have any questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Thanks again for having us.
There it is, the GTS, and I see that JC has popped onto the live chat, folks, so if you have further questions for TerraTrike about the GTS or anything else TerraTrike-related, pop in there and ask away. So thanks for that report, JC, appreciate it. All right, now let's move along to our featured segment. Larry, go ahead and bring Marco and Sophia up, if you would, and we'll ask a preliminary question before we get to go in here. There we go. Hello, Marco.
Hello,
hello Sophia.
Hello,
everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Yes, it's very nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much.
It's always a pleasure. You always do great stuff, Marco. I wanted to start just with a preliminary question here, and then we're going to get to your video and slides. So this is about a new build, something very different than you've done before, and it is an off-road recumbent. This is a rare bird, as we say. So I just before we get started here, I was wondering, Marco, can you give me the backstory? Why did you want to do this?
The reason is that I wanted to go completely to something completely different, out of my, let's say, area of comfort, because my aim is maybe always to have bikes as fast as possible, as light as possible, racing and so on. But in these days, in these months, I had some chat with my friends, especially with Mino, who's a great friend of mine, and he likes this kind of bikes. So compact long wheelbase, something for me is quite heavy, not so high performance and so on. But I was curious. So, and especially it's something that is very useful for me because I want to see something I have never seen. So I have a bike, let's say heavy bike. I don't know to say, maybe it could be heavy. I don't know. That's the question, the main question. So, if the thing is, I always go on the road with fast bikes, let's go off road with a, let's say, not so fast bike to see if it is comfortable, if a recumbent can go off-road in, let's say, quite a nice way. I don't know.
Yeah. So this is the question that that you attempted to answer. And so
yes.
If that's okay, I think we'll take a look here. We'll just get into it a little bit. We're going to start out with a video that you put together, and you can narrate over this and talk about what's going on as you try it out, and then we'll get into the build of it as well. So, okay, Larry, go ahead and play Marco's video, and Marco, go ahead and talk over this for us.
Okay. That's it. So I've gone and searching on the internet and to know which are the, let's say, the best, maybe the best way to for inspiration. And there were some very good inspirations. For example, there's a very nice YouTube channel that is Off-Road Bent. And there was some very, very nice videos, and that were very inspiring for me. They were in the Monument Valley, and so I dream about it. Of course, I'm not in Monument Valley in this part of the video. Here I am in Borgo Manero. So it is in this video, it is the first ride with this bike. And it was quite fast, of course, on the flat. On the flat is the best area in which it can ride. On tarmac, okay, it can go. Here we see. I had some issues with, as you see, Italian drivers. That's always like that. In this case, there are some young people. I don't know who are those ones, but they do not recognize the bike. And they just yell at me something. I don't know. It was very curious in this video. So I put in the video it was something to smile at. That's it. I called them jackass, but maybe the jackass is clever than those people. But it was nice to put in the video. This is Sofia. She's riding an Italian bike, and it is not recumbent, but it was nice to drive. Yes, Sofia. And this is another. This is a gravel rev. It's another try I had before, and it is the mountain bike. It is a very cheap mountain bike from which I started. Very cheap, so it was quite heavy. You see, the first day of the construction, I started with an extra long wheelbase. It was 2 meters and so on. So I tried to make it not as long as possible. So I cut the frame and I joined it. I glue it with it's not carbon fiber. It's a very nice way to not to weld aluminum. But I use epoxy mixed with TechnoShell. TechnoShell is a cellulose fiber. It's a way of building that's very nice. And I show it in my YouTube channel, Many Construction. So I think that many people can use it without welding. And so in your basement, as I do, they can build almost anything. And in this video, I'm trying to show all the construction, all the phases of the construction phases. So it is easy, very easy. This building, I use just, let's say, 20 man hours. Here you see some tips I show because, for example, I use this Dutch tape, in Italian, American tape, just to compact the fiber because there are some clothes of a fabric of carbon fiber, of course, to reinforce all the, let's say, gluing, welding, how you say. And then I put everything together. This is not the final result, but this is the result in which the bike stays together. Then I put, as you see, a common recumbent seat. It is a seat taken from my other construction, so it is not the exact seat for this kind of bike, because you need a very vertical seat and it's not very useful. I used this seat for the Rev. I call my bikes all Revs, but the classic Revs are, of course, the high performance Rev, so for tarmac. And then I went to the final, let's say, final medium result. I used that seat. It was not comfortable. It was not the best choosing. So I tried to make another seat from a cart, a go-kart seat. I had to start from not from scratch because it is quite difficult to start from scratch. And here you see it is a good example for understanding this gluing. This glue is this epoxy. TechnoShell, so this cellulose fiber. So you put the things maybe made in carbon, but you can use aluminum together just in place, and then gluing with this glue. You must wait 24 hours, then it is hard, and you can reinforce with carbon fiber. This is the whole procedure. There you see me making. It's very common epoxy resin. It's nothing else than epoxy resin. It is a building procedure that I think it is for everyone. Everyone can do it. You just have to practice some, just to know what makes what, and then the final results are very good. You just have to be, let's say, patient for refine all the pieces because it's not very easy. The first time is not easy, but in my YouTube channel, I always try to show these procedures with a lot of tips so everyone can replicate this construction. So you saw it is just a common, cheap recumbent bike, but it is full suspended, so it's very suitable for this kind of bikes. Actually, what I found is that it is a long wheelbase, so the weight distribution is on the back. It's, let's say, 4%, 70-30% on the back. So the rear suspension, the suspension is mandatory. As for the front, I don't know, because after this video, I've made other videos you can find on my YouTube channel if you want to watch and subscribe, of course, if you want. But the font fork, maybe it could be good even if it is not suspended, so rigid. Because in that case, I can take the bottom bracket lower, and it could be better, because at the moment it's 10 centimeter above the level of the seat. And it's good, but I think it is not the better position.
Okay, Marco, let's go through your slides. I want to get through the deep dive here on the build, okay. And then we will come back and take a look at your evaluation of, you know, what you think about it, what you could have done better, and sort of thing, if that's okay. All right, so Larry, let's pop the slides up here. And let's go. And panel, as we go through these, put a message in private chat here if you have any questions, say, for Marco as we go through this. Just let me know. Marco, go ahead and tell us what we're looking at here as we go through the
detail. We're looking at the first part of the construction, of the building. So the first try was to understand which could be the good wheelbase. And as you see in the picture, this wheelbase is enormous. It's above 2 meters. I am quite tall, so I am 1 meter and 87 centimeters. So,
yeah. And Trey, go ahead and just kind of page through these, unless Marco wants you to hold on it. Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
But in this case, if you see the one long wheelbase is shorter than the picture before. Of course, you have to deal with some compromise. In this case, the compromise is to put the bottom bracket. You see. They're in that position, very high, because if not the pedals, we have some issues with the front fork. So it's mandatory to put it in that position for my 8. I know it's quite high. I know it's quite a long wheelbase, but it's like that. If not, as I said before, you must modify the fork. In this picture, you can see the welding. I call it welding. It's not welding. It's gluing. There are part of aluminium and carbon fiber. I can put carbon fiber and aluminium together, and there are no issues at all. In all my construction, aluminium and carbon fiber are quite the same. They are as like the same, and they can be put together in the same way. So put together with that kind, let's say, of glue, and then reinforce with cloth, with fabric of carbon fiber. And as you see in this picture, there are layers of carbon fiber. I actually put as a reinforcement for 5-6 layers of 200 grams for square meter. That's the measure of this carbon fiber, just to reinforce. And it's not an unidirectional, it's a bidirectional fabric, so it can reinforce in many directions. So you cannot make a lot of mistakes with this building. It is not a way of building just that I invented. But I think that with these tips I show in my YouTube channel, many lovers of this kind of building can replicate something. You can almost make anything, any frame you want. It's just a matter of fantasy. It's just a matter of building what you want. And it's fantastic, because from the original bag that was cheap and extra heavy, I just add 1.5, let's say 2 kilos more. And half a kilo is the seat. And the other half a kilo is just the piping that I add, because it is much longer than the original one. But if I can put some lighter stuff, let's say more expensive, I can reach, I think, 13 kilograms. And I think for a recumbent off-road bike, it could be a good weight. It's not extra weight, is not an elephant, let's say. I called it Monster Rev because it's like a monster. It's extra long. It's like a truck. It's like, let's say, an American chopper. The way you're riding it with that handlebar so high in the sky, it's like a chopper. But I think it is not can be thought as a chopper bike, but as a gravel off-road recumbent, and that's not my bike. And but it is interesting, of course.
we'll get to that. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But the thing is the first, let's say, conclusion. It's just the way you must view this kind of building.
Okay,
it's
wait a minute. I hate to keep stopping you, but before I don't want to get to the conclusion before we finish up. We have a bunch of questions from our panel even about details here yet, okay. Marco. So I'm going to start here with Hansa. I know he's got a question for you. Hansa, go ahead.
Hi, Hansa.
Yeah, hi, Marco. Very interesting for me because I'm always on the search for the very best off-road recumbent, let's say. I have started with Dual 26 short wheelbase. Then I'm now with Dual 20-inch short wheelbase, which I think is better than Dual 26 because you are lower and you can feel safer. And then, of course, you can go through more difficult terrain than when you are high and you are afraid to fall. So, and a long wheelbase was always or has been always for me next try or next step I would like to do and try it, but it has never happened yet. And my question is whether you can safely reach the ground with your feet.
Okay. That's a good point. Why I've chosen the compact or long wheelbase? In the first years, I have been building my first, it was the third bike. I had built a short wheelbase. So my feet were very high in the ground. I have two idlers. And it was made for the road, but I went off road, so something I knew about that. The aim of this bike is because I think it is a center point. If you have a short chain or a very straight chain without idler or with a very very low angle between the chains, within the lines of the chain, you can push harder for a very small. For the single pedaling, I don't know how to translate. So you in the first angles, you push on the pedal. If you have an high recumbent, classic recumbent with the extra long chain, what I feel in my pedal, because I am quite powerful. So as soon as I push, it goes elastic and a lot of power for what is my feeling. Goes in the two idlers. So in this case, I just wanted to know if I had a extra straight chain, and in the picture you see some angle in the idler, but actually if I put the bottom bars a little low, and this is the other step, I can take the chain straight. So what I wanted to know is it very different having this chain line from the common bent short wheelbase, and about the pedals, the height of the pedals. If I have some issues with the rough terrain and so on, what I actually see is that it's not an issue to take the pedals on the terrain, even if it is quite high off the ground. So what I want to say is a good way of biking off-road. It's not like a mountain bike. No, actually not. It could be compared to a gravel bike. And about the short wheelbase, I think, I don't know, I may be back on my on that geometry, but at the moment, I think it works well as it is. So I will not make another bike for off-roading short wheelbase. It's good. Maybe I can adjust just geometry, the bottom brush at just quite lower, 20 centimeter. I don't know. I can lower the front using a fixed front fork, and maybe could be nice. Anyway, if you see my last video on this Monster Rev, I went to the Mottarone, and the Mottarone is a super mega steep climb in my area. It's one of the most famous. And I went there 30 years ago with my father. We were, let's say, amateur, and we were not very, very trained. But I could, with this bike, go on pedals where 30 years ago we were on feet. So it can climb. It is not the best way, but in for the first experiment, the main issue is weight and just the position of the bottom bracelet. After that, I don't know. I want to just to underline that it is an experiment. I like going off-road. I like going on the gravel, yes, quite a lot. I like extra high-speed stuff, but it behaves very well. It's comfortable, it's good handling. And today, Sofia, we went here together, and how was the bike? Come era la bicicletta oggi? The Monster Rev. It was going good, okay? We were with some friends. One very strange thing, actually, is another one. People are scared of that bike. Nobody stops me and tell me, oh, what's that? Very interesting. When I go with the other bikes, every time I stop, there's a lot of people asking me, oh, what's that? Oh, no, it cannot go uphill. No, it's not comfortable, and so on. For these people, just see it and, what's that? No, don't talk to that one. It's a weird guy. Let's stay away from that guy. It's very strange, because maybe they recognize he's a mountain bike. I don't know. And not a recumbent. I don't know. But as the handling is good, and the way of when you stop, you are, let's say, safe. I never, for the few kilometers I've done, I never fall down and crash someone, something of myself or of the bike. It's very interesting. Another thing I want to underline is that there was another bike you can find on YouTube, on internet, that is the Rinsler. I think it is a Russian builder. It's very similar. So there was something that I liked a lot, but it has underseat steering. And that's a thing I don't like for safe reason and for, let's say, capability of producing power. I don't know. It's a feeling. If I have these underbars in these positions, I cannot create a lot of power. If I have this underbar, I'm much in a comfort zone, let's say.
So that works best for you. We talked about that, I know, earlier. All right, we've got a couple more questions from the panel. But before we get to that, this is something that I asked you about, and I really wanted to go over. And we've got the question here from Scott. What is the gluing process? So you mentioned it. And, Trey, if you can find a couple of those slides where he is putting the frame together, we'll take another look at it and Marco can explain. So typically, I guess most builders are going to weld the frame together, but this is not something that you do. It's not, it doesn't work for you. No, there we go. No. We can start there, Trey. That's great.
Yes.
Tell us about this process, if you would.
I cannot weld aluminum because it's not easy. I can weld steel, let's say, in a good way, but I'm not able to weld aluminum and so on. But I use this glue. I call it glue, just to simplify. It is a mixture of epoxy resin, common epoxy resin, and cellulose fiber. You can find, I have an Italian dealer that sells this one. It is called Technocell. It's just cellulose. I don't know how.
Yeah, cellulose. It's cellulose. A cellulose wrap, right?
There are some pieces, very, very extra light, white pieces of cellulose. If you mixture together in a right way, you can find something that it's a glue. It's like a glue. You put things together with that. So you put the glue from the piece of aluminum and the other one. You push together, And then you make them the pieces stay together, and they are gluing after 24 hours. They are together in a very stiff condition. Then you just refine, as because it is not, of course, perfect. And after that, you reinforce with carbon fiber. And it's not easy to explain
there,
with my English, but if you go on my YouTube channel, there are many examples in which you can find all the phases of this construction building.
Yeah, yeah, and we're going to, of course, link to that, your amazing YouTube channel. So, all right, let's bring Nina up. Nina had a question for you as well, Marco. Go ahead, Nina.
Yeah, so most long wheelbase recumbents have a smaller front wheel than the rear wheel. Did you consider that? Did you rule it out? If you did rule it out, why?
Yes, I considered, and it could be an easy way to make it work better for position, for lightness, for everything. But there's a big issue because I just tried the 26-inch wheels. It's just the only way, at least 26, not to go off-road and to stick with the stones. I just tried a lot. If you use just a very little stone, you just crash, you just stop. You cannot go in my area is like that because there are, the roads are very rough. They are not flat. It is not a very easy gravel. So it could be not enough. Maybe the 29 could be the better choice. But with the 29, it means it will be extra high. So it is everything. It is a compromise. What I tell you, it is not. It is good. It is a good bike, but a compromise. So it's comfort. I can go almost in any place in my area. So very rough terrain and so on. If it is too steep, if it is too rough, I just go out of the seat and push. It's not. But it gives me an extra opportunity of going everywhere. For now, I just go on the road. On the road, it's so dangerous. It's extra dangerous in Italy. People are crazy. Come sono I guidatori italiani? They are the craziest people of all. If they see a bike, oh, just, I have to hit him. I have to pass him very close. I have to just, don't touch him. Just so close, and he can go, and I crash. It's not my fault. Yes, crash, but itself. If you go off-road, yes, there are the trees, so you can hit a tree and die, but you're free to. so you're free. You are alone, and so that's it. That's the point. So, it's a good bike for freedom.
Yeah, so you're saying that a 20-inch front wheel would not handle the rocks and the potholes and the roughness of the road as well?
For the kind of my roads outside here, yeah, it's not good. It's not a correct measure. It's not. It's mandatory to use 26 at least.
Okay.
With good tires, of course.
All right. Good. Thank you, Nina.
My experience. Thank you.
All right. So let's kind of bring this to a close. Can we sum up, first of all, you've talked about most of this, but if you could quickly sum up with your thoughts about the pros and the cons. How well did you do? Where does the Rev Monster excel? Where is it good? And the cons, where did it not meet your expectations? Let us know about that, if you would.
At the moment, it reaches all my expectations. All I didn't have extra high expectations, but it completes all the expectations. So it's good for what I want to use, to where I want to ride, the way I want to use it. It's very good. It's a good bike. It's not something that I invented. It's something that I have taken from the internet, from picture and so on, and tried to just to sum to use the better aspect of every bike that I saw on the web. The pros, let's start from the pros. The pros is I can go everywhere, and I can go everywhere in my area, everywhere. So it's a freedom, it's a complete freedom. Another pro is that it's faster than the mountain bike. The mountain bike version, the original version, is lower on the gravel, on the flat. We are talking about the flat, on the gravel and on the tarmac, but on the flat, because you can feel the aero efficiency. You can feel it. I can go at 30 kilometers per hour with extra low wheels and so on because of the on tarmac, because of the position, of course, recumbent. So it's a recumbent mountain bike, definitely very good. It's comfortable, but for the comfort, I had to make this seat in two pieces. I don't know if I have explained. It was a one-piece seat, but it's very complicated to understand, to know the correct shape of the seat. Very, very difficult. So I have divided it in two pieces and tried a different position. It's not a seat that in which my back, my spine is all old with the upper part of the seat. So I don't push my back on the seat. But it's comfortable. It's comfortable because you are quite vertical, so you don't need the upper part. Maybe I can make something, shape it in a different way, but it is comfortable. When I went to the Mottarone, I've ridden 70 kilometers, 5 hours of ride, and I didn't have any pain on my back, almost any, so it works well. It's quite difficult to shape it, of course, but I've at the moment it works. Mm-hmm. Another it's good overall. So if you want to go outside in any terrain and enjoy your ride, it's the right bike. Definitely very right. The transmission efficiency is good. It has a single idler. It is very good. It is a single chainring on the front. It's correct. It's enough because the top speed may be 40 kilometers per hour. It's enough. Good handling and good stability even at, let's say, fast speed. So it works well. And if you have a pothole and so on, you just want to go there because it's so comfortable and as you
fun.
Go
and fun, right?
I mean, that's so fun. You come back and as a kid, you are a kid on a bike, just like in the picture of Sofia. And in fact, she told me it's so fun, this bike, just build one for me. And I told her, first I build for me, then maybe I build another one for you.
All right. And what's okay. What's the worst part?
The worst part is weight. 17 kilos could be lower, could be 14, but you can feel weight. As for performance off-road, you don't feel it because off-road you cannot measure it very in a very strict, in a very well condition as you measure it on tarmac on the road. But it's lower. I think it's lower than a common mountain bike because you have 3-4 kilos and you feel those kilos are those one. You can make it better, but there will always be 2-3 kilos more, 2-3 kilos more than mountain bike. So you have to feel it. You have to deal with it. It's right. Definitely that. Well, the transmission is good, but is not as good as the mountain bike because, of course, it has a shorter chain. And some watts go, let's say, when I push 300 watts on the front wheel drive, I lose 5 watts, 10 watts, let's say 10 from 10 to 15. In this case, it's 10%, so it will be 30 watts. It's quite a lot, not a super high value, but it's quite a lot. You can feel it. And there's a sort of elastic, let's say, it's like a spring, the chain, you can feel quite a lot of this spring sensation feeling. Okay,
so you lose some power in that.
Yes,
in transmission there.
Another thing is that, yes, you are not so high, but you are quite high. So the handling, when it is a very extra rough terrain, you must be good. You are driving. You must be a good driver. In this case, if you're not a good driver, I think there's no way of improving the stability of the bike. There is another opportunity. You can drive a trike, an off-road trike. In this case, I know some people that maybe older people or people that doesn't want to practice so much on a two-wheel drive, on a two-wheel bike, can go to a three-wheel drive. I think I am quite good in riding and so on. I am a quite good tester. So maybe what I see could not be the same for other people. So that's another point, very, absolutely, very important.
Okay.
So good, but not extra good. But in any case, even if this bike is completely out of my feelings, of my comfort area, I like it. I will keep it and I will use it. I like it very much. I like it very much. For the other cons, I don't know. It's a good bike. It's a cheap bike even to build, because you just have to. I am able. I think many people can do just to cut, to glue, to reinforce, and then you are out.
You were done in no time. You finished this project. How long did that take?
It took me 20 man hour. I think that even if you haven't any practice, 50 hours could be enough. You just have to make any price. If when I build a common, let's say common rev, what I call iRev, so it is my classic version of four-wheel drive, very, very similar to the cross bike, I use 40 to 50 man hour. And I am, let's say, quite fast in building things. So it is double time. And that's the one I want to say. So it's easy. It's very easy. If you start from a good bike, that bike is a bike that cost me €200. So €200. So very cheap. So extra cheap.
So there you go. So I guess, as we talked about before, if you add the pros and cons up, the bike is a compromise, right? It's not perfect for any one thing, but for doing what you wanted to do, it's pretty good at everything. And so that's why you're going to keep it, it sounds like. So, all right, let's that's great. And guys, again, Marco Ruga, check out his YouTube channel, where he is now doing more and more of his videos in English as well to expand his audience. Doing a great job of that, Marco. I wanted to finish up with, I know you wanted to say a few things about your latest projects and what you're working on right now and some of the faster bikes and such. So tell us about, take a couple minutes and tell us about what you're working on now.
Yes, at the moment, I'm working on what are my perfect bikes. So extra, let's say I hope, high speed bikes. So it is a long wheel, low recumbent bike, extra low recumbent bike. And it's what is the evolution of my HTH. HTH means I weigh well. So it's a bike that it's so fast that it's so dangerous. With which I have ridden in the World Championship, and it was a good bike. But I want to know if I could make it even faster or lighter. So that's my next one. But if you follow my YouTube channel, you have also seen the 26 HTH. I hope you can have a look. This 26 is the version of the 28 HTH. So it has two wheels of 28 inch wheels, in which the front one is 26. And it was very interesting, if you go, because I just wanted to know the 26, so the smaller wheel on the front, what different speed could carry, so if it could be faster or not. And even if the position of the rider that is, let's say, 10 centimeter higher than the HTH 28 could take to an higher or lower speed in the same conditions. And the conclusion was that it is not faster. It is faster than the, let's say, higher EV, but it's not as fast as the HTH. So you have to go, you are hungry. Sophia, she's hungry.
Yeah, yeah. Are you starving? Pasta, maybe. We need to wrap up anyway. So anyway, you guys are great. Thank you so much, Sophia and Marco, for coming on and telling us about the bikes. We'll have you back on for your next version, and we can talk about that. But thanks for taking the time. Marco Ruga is the channel on YouTube. Please have a look at that, guys. And any final words?
I want to apologize for my extra bad English, so be patient. Go on my YouTube channel. I will try to improve. We are seeing some Netflix series just to improve in English, so improve our English. We are trying to make as best. Just think that Italian people Italians are in very difficult conditions if they want to speak in English. So just be patient. I just want you to understand what I make every day. But that's my, for the moment, best English. So
yeah, your English is fine, Marco. It's much better than you make it out to be. So Marco, grazie and ciao.
Ciao, a presto.
Ciao.
Okay.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. There we go, Marco Ruga, and let's move along now to our next builder. As I said earlier, Alex unfortunately couldn't be with us live, but we do have his video showing this very interesting tilting trike that he is intending at some point to try to make into a velomobile. It's made out of wood. Let's have a look at it, Larry. Okay, guys, we are here today with Alex Dupre, a gentleman from the UK who has been working on a very interesting product that I think you're going to really enjoy seeing. Alex, hello. How are you doing today?
Hi. Welcome to the UK. Welcome to my workshop. How are you? I'm fine.
Alex, first of all, could you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an engineer. So in real life, I work as a naval architect. So you can see some of the machine tools I've got in the background. So I've been using those, hopefully to good effect, to help me with this, but also some woodworking skills as well.
All right. Now, of course, you know, this is the Laid Back Bike Report, and we focus on all things recumbent. So I'm interested, and I guess my viewers probably are as well. Tell me all about your recumbent biking history.
Well, my recumbent biking history is basically zero, although I have done a lot of cycling. I cycle 2,000 or 3,000 miles a year, so upright cycling, predominantly mountain biking, road biking, but I've never yet ridden a recumbent bike, so you might be quite surprised to see what I've come with in my design. I suppose the seed of the idea was from my trips to Paris, where there are an awful lot of three-wheeled scooters whizzing around, like the Piaggio MP3 and that sort of thing. And those are tilting three-wheel tadpole trikes. But I'd also seen and been interested in velomobiles. So the idea of being able to go faster for the same effort or for even less effort, I found was quite appealing. So thinking, could I design a bike or a trike that was, you know, a tilting three-wheeler, but also perhaps a velomobile as well? So you had the advantages of three wheels, you know, more grip, that kind of thing, but also hopefully the ability to go faster for the same sort of effort. You know, keep dry in the winter, so I do a lot of winter commuting, so getting cold and wet in the winter on the way to work isn't much fun. So all of those ideas started to come together in my mind. It was really predominantly a technical challenge, an intellectual challenge, to see whether I could come up with a workable design. Okay, so what you've got here is a wooden frame. The front is on the left and the back is on the right. So it's a tadpole three-wheeler. So what I'm working on here is a prototype. So this isn't intended to be the finished design. It was just really a vehicle for testing whether the three-wheel tilting mechanism would work. And since I've been doing quite a bit of woodwork and had a fair bit of scrap wood around, I made the perhaps rather questionable decision to make the whole thing in wood. So this is just a view of that. It's effectively laminated from plywood. This is the basic backbone of the thing. So it's about 30 mil thick, I think it is. So two layers of 15 mil birch ply. Another view of the front there. So this is the main spine starting to come together. Here we've got some edging strips, reinforcing strips being glued on. So these are laminated strips, glued and screwed in place. This is the front end. I've hacked out a big lightning hole there. That saved about 2 kilograms in weight just by itself. This bit is the rear dropouts, I suppose you could call it, the chainstay, the seat stay, if that's the equivalent. So these clearly had to be bent. So I've laminated two thicknesses of birch ply. So this is a top view showing the offset and the bending that's been created by the lamination of the ply. This is the rear end starting to come together. So you've got the seat stays and the chain stays. Okay, so this one is the front end. These tabs, there's the video here, I think, so if the video plays through, the tabs you can see screwed on there are the mounting points for the front tilting mechanism. And as the video plays, we're working towards the rear end here. So you've got the little spine, which has got lightning holes cut into it. And then there's a sheet, in fact, two sheets of ply over the top of it to hold it all together. So these are the tilting wishbones or tilting arms, if you like. The one at the top is the upper arm. So it's a single cantilever arm. It's the upper one that takes the weight. The two lower ones there, the left and the right, don't take any weight, but they obviously hold the wheel in place and have a certain amount of force going through them. So this bit here is either the left or the right upright. So this bit swivels, and it's the piece that connects the upper to the lower tilting arms, and the wheel is screwed to this part. So for the prototype, it's made of welded up steel tube. I used fairly chunky section steel tube. I think it's probably over-engineered, but really for the prototype, it was all about just keeping the cost down. So those bits are MIG welded together. So a little bit crude, these will be painted. This is the main frame upside down. So these tabs here are the mounting points for the lower tilting arms. And that peg of wood, I've driven that through just to help add a little bit of reinforcement. But those tabs, I'm going to run a Jubilee clip around those or a metal strip to really reinforce them. So here you can see the tilting mechanism starting to come together. The top and the bottom are fitted with plain bearings in oilite bushes. And the tilting, the steering upright, the metal bit that the wheel's attached to, is fitted top and bottom with rod end bearings. And I made up some misalignment spaces to give you about 20 degrees plus or minus of steering and 30 degrees of tilt action. So I reckon 30 degrees of tilt is about as much as you would want before the grip starts to run out. So I guess that's probably about 15 degrees of tilt showing there. So it will go a little bit further than this. But I did some sort of experimenting with my bike and decided anything over about 20 degrees of tilt was probably getting a little bit scary. So that's the front mechanism starting to come together. I had to make some adjustments to the lower tilting arm just for clearance purposes. So I'm just setting the length of the insert that I had to cut out and glue back in. These are the tie rods, the steering tie rods. They're made of carbon fiber tubing with bosses glued into the end. So I used a product called Voodoo Glue, which I got here from Easy Composites in the UK. Really strong stuff. This is the steering bell crank. So again, it's a steel fabrication welded up. So this is the part that transmits the steering movement from the handlebars through to the tie rods and the steering wheels. And that's the bell crank being test fitted in place on the frame. There's a few more bits yet to be welded into place. Okay, so this is a short video clip showing the steering mechanism and the tilting mechanism. You can see how the bell crank works, then the tilting going over there. The way the steering works is it's like a tank kind of steering. So two handlebars, one goes forwards, one goes back, mounted on a horizontal axis. So you've got two steering push rods to make that work. So this sort of trial fit here just gave me confidence that there was no problems with clearance and everything was working more or less as expected. Here we go. So this is not quite a rider's eye view, but nearly a rider's eye view of the front left lower tilting arm. So you can see the one of the steering push rods there, the one that's on the right of the vehicle. So that is another carbon fiber push rod. So these little gizmos are the misalignment spacers. So what these do is they fit into the rod end bearing and allow the angle of articulation of the rod ends to be much greater than it would otherwise be. And it's that that allows you to achieve the 30 degree tilting angle. Without those, you'd be lucky to get about 15 degrees tilt. And that shows one of the rod ends with and without the misalignment spacers, just to show you the difference in the angle that you can achieve. So you can buy those things, but I thought I'd make them up on the lathe. This is the rear wheel. So I've got a Nexus Inter-8 8-speed internal hub gear with coaster brake or back pedal brake. I couldn't actually get the wheel set that I wanted to. I got all the parts and assembled it myself. In fact, this brings us almost bang up to date, in fact. So I've literally just finished lacing up the rear wheel, getting the spokes tensioned. To me, this was a bit of an adventure because I've never laced up a wheel before. So all part of the learning process. The remaining jobs are the handlebars and the seat and the drivetrain, which I think are going to be relatively easy from this point. And what you can see in this clip is roughly what I'm aiming at in terms of the final finished product. So it's a more or less a fully fared aerodynamic body with the suspension arms or the tilting arms sticking through the front of the fairing. So that's where I'm thinking. I've shown with the CAD design that the overall design is practical from a design layout perspective. But the point of the prototype, of course, is to check that it's actually practical and workable in the real world. So that last clip there just shows you what I'm aiming at and hopefully gives you a sense of the future direction for this project.
Thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Great. Thank you. It's been a real pleasure to meet you and to take part.
All right, Alex. So sorry you couldn't be with us live to answer questions. Intriguing project, a lot going on there. Guys, you'll want to check out Alex's YouTube channel. Again, I'll put that in the show notes below. He does amazing work. And I guess one of the more fascinating things I learned about Alex is that he's never ridden a recumbent before. So when he completes this prototype and hops on and starts riding, that'll be the first time he rides a recumbent. So interesting stuff. He's putting together a tilting trike. As you've seen in the past, we've done a number of other folks working on tilting mechanisms. He comes at it from a completely fresh point of view. So we'll see how that all works out. But thank you, Alex Dupre. All right. Let's move along now to our segment with Mr. Wizard. So Doug, as you guys know, has been doing a series of segments about gonzo road fixes, things you can do if you find yourself out on the road without proper tools. How can you fix various sorts of problems with your bike or trike? Let's have a look at the latest road fix, Larry.
Bicycle Evolution, we are going to continue our series of road fixes you can do with minimum or no tools or improvised tools out there. Today we're going to talk a little bit about chain repair and master links or quick links as they're known. In this case, he's right here. We're going to talk about how to take him off and put him back on without any tools or with an improvised tool, which I'll go get outside in the back if I can find one. Stay tuned. Here we go.
Yeah, we go out here and see if we can find a official tool or an unofficial tool to take these quick link apart. Yeah, that'll work. So we got this thing here. That is a piece of metal Like a big twisty.
Okay, we found our official Quick Link removing tool, and we're going to stick it over here. I will thread this through and thread it through again. And then we just start tightening until it comes apart. Just like your thing, you can already see it starting to move a little bit there. I do this, I have to remember to always use the newest chain. Whoop, we broke it. Didn't quite get enough, or did we? We're about halfway through it, so let's get the other half. Come like that. I might be able to just pop it now because it's mostly done. Like that. Across like that. And let's see if I can just pull it apart. Nope. I have to keep doing it this way. There it went. Voila. And the Quick Link's apart. Okay. So that we managed to take Quick Link off, we're going to put it back on. So the way you do that without tools is almost the same as with tools. Put it back onto it hooks. We're going to, this time, though, we're going to put tension back on the drivetrain. We're going to go ahead and hook all this back up. Like that. And of course, our chains decided to come off its cassette. That's life in the showbiz. There we go. Okay, we're going to bring that around to here so it's on the drive side. You can see it's there. All right, now we're going to take the bike down like that. Put it on the floor here. I'm going to climb onto this cruise bike and I'm going to set the chain. Ready? Get it on that one. Yep. There we go. And the Quick Link's back on. The way I did that was I held the brakes and then snapped my foot forward and kicked the pedal on the power side. So there you go. That's how you put a Quick Link back on.
That's a guy you want to have, you know, riding alongside you when you got a problem with your bike out on the road, isn't it? So, Doug, that's great. Great thinking. And twisty ties. Yeah, who knew? I just thought it was for tying up little bags or whatever. So, all right. Thank you, Doug. And let's now move on to our next segment. You guys are, I'm sure, very familiar with Jonathan Garcia of Rose City Recumbents out in Portland. Amazing fella who is always involved with various designs, very creative things going on with especially two-wheeled recumbents. And Jonathan contacted me about his latest Metabike. You guys know that he had picked up Metabike as a line for his business in the shop. Jonathan has the Mystique out now that he has worked on, and he created a video for us to have a close look at this very interesting two-wheel recumbent. Let's have a look, Larry.
All right, so today we're looking at the Metabike's Mystique, and I'm going to point out some of the features. This bike is a high racer by definition, but it's probably the lowest seat, you know, lowest seat height of any high racer. It's about 23 inches here. To accommodate that, we use a one power idler, which is here, and two return idlers. It hardly has any chain noise or any restriction in the pedaling. Now, the features of the frame itself, it is titanium frame. We're going to make a titanium version in limited production, and then we're going to make aluminums as well. The titanium version is about 6.1, 6.2 pounds, depending on the frame size. There's two different frame sizes. This one is a 47-inch wheelbase, and then we have one with a 49-inch wheelbase. You can see that a lot of the mass of the bike is down below the seat, unlike a lot of other high racers. This gives it a really low center of gravity, so it has excellent manners no matter what speed you're going. It is a fixed boom, so the fixed boom allows us to have a very stiff front end, a lot of good power transfer. It has a tapered head tube. The adjustability in the seat itself is from about, right now I usually run it about 25 degrees, but it'll go down to 15 degrees measured across the flat here, and then up to I think about 35 degrees. So a huge range of adjustment. The other adjustment is using the RANS seat rail system. So this has an adjustment all the way up to this stop, all the way back to this stop, or actually this tube interferes, so it's going to go back to here. So it's about a 39 to a 47 in the standard size, and then in the larger frame, you can go up to a 49 or 50. Just the chain line is designed so it's not hitting against any part of the bike here. So unlike a lot of low slung high racers, the chain is not hitting the fork. It is tight in here. It's very narrow. I have room to pedal on both sides. Also, there's no interference with the chain hitting when I turn. The idler system, this is one power idler like we talked about. I have it set up right now with the 2x10 system. It'll take 11 speed as well. The other kind of beautiful feature is with these dropouts and the way they're cut out, it's really easy to get the wheel in and out. You're not fighting that back wheel. The disc brake sits in between the two stays in the back. Brakes are very good because it's spaced between two points here. So it's triangulated well, so that stops very well. Two things that are different, that'll be different on the production, is this will be closed. This will be capped off. And then we're moving this mount forward by about 100 millimeters, which will allow a better angle here for in a fuller range. Right now, they sit a little flat. Why is this bike so different? You know, why does it have so many tubes underneath the seat, right? And traditionally, at least in the U.S., it's been a stick frame. And stick frames, straight across, like all the brands we know and love, a stick that goes across, which is a very inexpensive way to make a bike, depending on material, of course. But also, it makes the simplest chain line because you just usually can get away with an over and under idler. The trade-off with the stick design is it won't fit shorter riders. It won't fit riders. Well, it'll fit riders that are tall very well, but tall riders tend to be strong riders. And what happens on a stick frame is it gets a lots of twist. It gets a little inchworming. Also, the European style of high racer, which is an S-bend, right? So S-bends introduces another problem, which is the inchworm effect. So under power, the bike can go like this. What I did is basically a hybrid truss frame. So we're taking the best of the front end, which is fixed, which I consider the best approach because it makes the stiffest front end for power. And then we incorporated it with a truss frame underneath. So a truss frame is going to give it some triangulation. Also, one of my criteria was to have, when it adjusts for different people, for different height people, the seat stays relatively the same height, right? Which we can't say about a stick frame. When we have a stick frame, taller people get it lower and shorter people get it higher, which is exactly the opposite of the way you want it. This also gives it a low center of gravity we talked about, but it's more like a ballast in a ship. So when you're going at high speeds, especially, and low speeds, and at both ends of the spectrum, this bike does a great job of being very steady and sure feeling, sure footed, and that makes a difference in the experience. Here's an example. So if I'm starting and stopping, I have a fairly upright, when I put my feet down, I can put one foot down, I can put both feet down. When I start and stop, it's easy to get going because of that low center of gravity. In a lot of ways, it feels like some of the low racers I've owned, but in a high racer form. Okay, so I wanted to show, demonstrate the UFR system and how this bike will fit a lot of different people as well. Now, we talked about the criteria for a good fit on a high racer. This has a lot of adjustability, like we talked about. We have a clearance here. And then, so I'm 5'7". I think my X seems 42, 41 and a half. And I'm going to bring Tobin in here. And Tobin is, what are you, Tobin? 6'1". So Tobin's 6'1". And we can show you, I'm not going to adjust anything, but you can kind of see that Tobin can get on. We can move the seat back just that little bit of amount there, an inch or so. And then he still has fairly good clearance here. Now, if I want to adjust this for him, I would just loosen that stem and move it up and out. Dominant foot forward for me is left. And then it's just a real, you don't have to do a lot of energy because it's so low. Just an easy start. I'm clipped in right now. And then you can see a nice turning radius. Stop. 1 foot. This is in a park. We're doing a lot of the filming here. I'm just going up this little grade. It's about 4 or 5, maybe 6%. And this is a nice, easy uphill. Just kind of grinds away. I'm going to show a stop on the hill here so you guys can see a stop and start on a hill. Unclip. Here's a dead start. 4 or 5% hill. Doing about 17 miles an hour uphill right now.
The Metabike Mystique. Jonathan Garcia, wow, who knows more about recumbent bike design these days than Jonathan? He is all over with all kinds of incredibly creative stuff. So, Jonathan, thank you so much for sending that to us, and we'll keep our eyes on the Mystique, of course. All right, let's move on to the Laidback Bike Report review team. It's time for a couple of reviews for this month that we have lined up for you. First of all, we have Joseph Janning, who is with us to show you about his ideas about the best Velomobile wheels. And he's actually with us, so we'll bring him up to have a little discussion about this afterwards. But for right now, Larry, let's have a look at Joseph's video.
I'd like to talk about Velomobile wheels. I have here 4 different front right wheels from my DF Velomobiles. The first from a 2016 DF, 28 spokes, standard 90 millimeter Sturmey Archer drums, a sort of rounded rim which makes the tire look wider than on other rims. The second is a 36 spoke wheel from my 2019 Viet, also standard 90mm drums with LXDA16 rims. Weighs in at 3 grams more than the first wheel that I showed you. Then there is an aftermarket product. This is a Ginkgo built wheel. It is my winter wheel. I had ordered it as a more sturdy, durable wheel that could take a bit of a beating. I think it has Kinlin rims, tubeless rims, but I don't run them tubeless. It has 32 spokes and is a little bit heavier than the stock wheels, which I think is due to the higher weight of the spokes. And it has, and that's the main feature, it has the Ginkgo refined 90mm drums. Black anodized, in large surface, mostly by these little cooling towers that you see here. And the fourth wheel is also Ginkgo built. It's my summer wheels. So it's basically the same kind of rim. It is has 28 spokes, lighter weight spokes than the other ones, and it weighs in at about 90 grams per wheel less than the stock wheels, and about 100 grams less than the winter wheel built by Ginkgo. Now, why would one want to spend money on aftermarket wheels when Velomobiles come with wheels? Let me tell you why.
As I give you my reasoning, let's take a look at a downhill where the quality of wheels does matter. Actually, what we're seeing here is me doing the same downhill twice. In the insert, it's me in a Quest a few years back, and the main screen is me in the DF. I think that was about a year and a half ago. Some people have complained about quality issues with the stock wheels, loose spokes, breaking spokes, and the like. I have not experienced this, but I have experienced the limits of stock wheels both on 70mm drums and on 90mm drums. As you can see here, I ride a lot in the mountains. I do many downhills. And I have to decelerate from high speeds to take those very tight turns. And that is actually the main problem. Once, a few years back on a tour of France, on a particularly long and steep pass, which is also part of the Tour de France passes, at the bottom, I had all spokes loose. Because the brakes had overheated, and I thought I wouldn't be able to continue. Eventually, I could because they cooled down, but in the aftermath, I had a number of broken spokes because of that overheating up there in the mountains. That experience led me to order my first set of Ginkgo wheels. I have these wheels for quality, safety, and reliability reasons. To me, the most important feature is the high-end drum brakes. These drums by Ginkgo can stand much more heat. The cooling towers seem to be very effective, and I have never experienced what I had experienced back then in France at the bottom of big hills. Also, I think these wheels are extremely well built. You get a full protocol of the building process and all of the details. I believe that the package is worth the extra money, 680 to 690 euros, depending on the specifications that you choose. An additional wheel set will allow you to specify one set for your special purposes, be it mountain riding or be it racing You can design and maintain a set which is quickly swapped against the standard set for such purposes. I think that's another important reason for looking into a second wheel set. What I do nowadays is when I do tours, day tours on roads mostly, then I will use the high-end, lightweight, low-rolling resistance wheel set with Schwalbe Pro 1 tires and latex tubes, and have my winter set for those rides where the terrain is rougher or the surface is rougher.
That's my take on wheels. Thanks for watching.
All right, there is Joseph. Hi, Joseph. How you doing?
Hi, Gary. I'm fine. How about you?
Doing great. Thank you for that wonderful review. You know, I don't want to get too deep into this because we don't have a ton of time on this, but I wanted to, Doug, are you, let's bring Doug up here. I guess the question I had is watching that review, Doug is contemplating doing some very long rides in preparation for some endurance races. And Doug, you were talking before we started today about this this one across the country, a kind of shakedown cruise and stuff. But first, let's start with Joseph. If you were going to do a long endurance ride, maybe a racing kind of ride in general across the, say, the U.S. Now, obviously, that's going to find you doing mountains and plain flat areas and all kinds of different conditions. If you had an accompanying support vehicle and you could have whatever wheels you wanted for that long tour, what would you pick, Joseph? Would you pick more than one?
Well, if I had a support vehicle with me, I would go for the lightest and fastest wheels for those sections that are really good for fast riding. You know, but if I could only have one pair on a cross the U.S. tour, I would probably go for the type of wheels that I now have for a winter wheel set. You know, and because I believe that they can stand a bit more. Now, yesterday I killed two of my Pro 1 tires because I bumped into a deep hole on a rail trail. You know, and I probably, according to my own rules, I should have taken my winter wheels for that. Because, you know, these kind of situations you don't have on a normal road. And these four ones with that particular set of wheels that I was just recommending are a pain to get off. They were a pain to get on, but getting them off was even worse than that. So today, you know, I fitted them with Schwalbe 1 tires because these I can take off without any instruments with my bare hands, and that was totally impossible. We had to cut them off in order to get them off.
That's crazy.
You know what I mean is, if you don't have that much of a perfect support, you want wheels that can actually stand something, and that means they have to be able to stand those long passes. They have to be good at disseminating the heat, and that's why I'm a big fan of the way that Ginkgo upgrades the standard Sturmey Archer tires, because in my own riding, I have experienced that you get much less issues with overheating or fading on long descents with these upgraded drums than with the standard ones.
Okay.
You know, and I've ridden both 70 millimeter and 90 millimeter standard drums.
All right. So now what I want to do is check with Doug. So Doug, on this trip you have planned, What do you have designed in for your wheels? Do you have just one set, or you have multiple sets? You're going to try some things out. What are you thinking?
Well, I have exactly what Joseph just specified. I have 36 spoke 90 millimeter Ginkgo drums, black anodized with the cooling fins. Because when I tested them 2 years ago, doing things like descending Wolf Creek Pass, which is a very tight, twisty descent, I was using Pro Ones and those exact wheels, and they got very hot, but they didn't fade. And you know, and the, those kind of descents are the kind we're going to see on this on the race. So you'll descend, you know, 5 or 6% grade for a mile or so, and then have to slam on the brakes, dump all your energy to go around a hairpin turn and let it go again to get going. So you definitely have to deal with all the exact same problems. I will use lighter wheels, less spoke count on some stretches, but primarily going through the mountains, it'll be those exact wheels. The only difference between the two of them will be 24 versus 36 spoke count wheels and CX X-rays versus Satan type spokes, which are a little heavier duty.
So two sets of wheels is the plan, Doug? Two sets of wheels for the trip?
Yeah, two major sets of wheels.
And what are you riding on? What velomobile are you riding on this trip? Or velomobiles? What are you planning?
It'll be a DF variant. It'll be the DF with some modifications.
Okay. Good. We'll get back then, with you on then, that, Doug. And
well, the other thing I was going to say is Joseph made a comment about the Pro Ones being hard to get off. This is my collection of broken tire levers from tearing Pro Ones off.
All right. So Doug kind of confirms that Joseph seems to know what he's talking about, which makes me really glad I have him on our review team. Joseph, I don't know if you've done too much thinking about this. What do you think you're going to be reviewing next for us? Have you given that some thought yet?
Well, you know, I was about to answer my trailer, my Cyclone trailer from Radical. And because we did this week, we did a CO2 emission free transport of 75 kilos of malt to brew beer, from Koblenz, which is some 90 kilometers down or upstream the Rhine, to here. And I was using my trailer for sharing my part of the load, and now I had to find that. Axles. They have quick release axles, these Radical trailers, is just slightly bent. So I can't take the axle out of the wheel again. So I'm not so convinced that I should be reviewing that. Otherwise, that would have been that, because this trailer is a really nice product otherwise. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll let you consider that. You'll be back in a month or two, I'm sure, with something interesting, and we look forward to that. Great review on the wheels, Joseph. Thanks. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Been a pleasure.
Okay, thanks. All right, guys. One last review then from our pal, Laid Back Cycles owner Mickey O'Brien out in California, and he's got a really nice review of the Ice Sprint X Tour, and this is the e-assisted version. So have a close look at this, Larry.
Laid Back Mickey here with Laid Back Cycles, and today we're doing the Laid Back Bike Report Trike Review. Let's check it out. Laid Back Mickey here. Now we're going to go over the review for the Sprint X Tour with a Steps 8000 motor on it. So let's check it out. And first we're going to ride it in our parking lot here. I'm going to give you a little bit of feedback on the flats. And then I'm going to take my GoPro and I'm going to go out and check it out on the trail. I have been riding this for a couple weeks now. I like it. Let's go ahead and take it out around the area here, and let's check it out.
Okay, while I'm riding, let me tell you a little bit about this trike. It's the Sprint X-Tour rear suspension with the Shimano Steps 8000 motor. It has 70 newton meters of torque, gets you up the hill nice. The motor goes up to 20 miles per hour. After that, it's all you. It comes with a 26-inch rear wheel, nice long wheelbase trike, super comfortable on long rides. This is a folding trike, so you saw it in the back of my truck, but it does fold so it can fit in the back of a hatchback or a small car, SUV, something like that, as long as your trunk is huge. But the folding helps out a lot. It's a 10-speed rear gearing with a bar and shifter. The motor, you don't need any more than a single up front on the motor. It does have a great ErgoLux seat. You can get the carbon seat if you want. And it has BB7 brakes, which are disc brakes, and they stop on a dime. So this one here has Shimano XT pedals, fully equipped The trike is ready to rock and roll.
Okay, so, it's a hot day today. It's in the upper 80s, and it is beautiful outside. I'm at the near Lake Natomas off the American River Bike Trail. It has a walking trail and a bike trail. So you'll find people walking along and then biking and scootering. And then just right out here, they're actually kayaking out there on the lake. I don't know if you can see it. And then there's the foothills in the background. But yeah, so far, this trike has been pretty awesome. The motor definitely helps. And I took it from our shop down to the bike trail, I don't know, about a few miles away. And rolling hills, the motor really works well. I've been going between trail and boost and eco, but I'm gonna turn around because I came down this steep hill that I've always had trouble getting up the hill. They have switchbacks for where that hill is, but I'm gonna go and use the boost on the motor. I'm gonna use the gearing on my trike because when you use a mid-drive, you definitely have to use the gears as well. There's not an extra throttle like a hub drive. So anyway, so far this trike is pretty amazing. The 26-inch tire, smooth, fast, and lower to the ground really helps keep up the speed. A lot of times I was going between like 18 and 22 miles per hour downhill. I think I hit like 32. And usually triking, I'm an average like 14, 16 miles per hour average. This one's easy to keep that going, especially with the motor. But yeah, so far so good. I'm liking it. I'm a sports type trike guy, so I like a faster trike. And this one is definitely a faster trike. So let's go try that hill. All right. A lot of people have motors nowadays. Just saw a bike go by with a motor. Man, it helps out so much. Makes the riding super nice. It makes it so it could go further. And you don't worry about getting overexhausted, even though like I'm still getting a great workout. I'm still in trail mode, not boost yet. I'm coming up to the steep hill pretty soon here. I'm gonna show you that. Also, that rear suspension on this Sprint really helps out for the bumps because this is a bumpy trail. Now, here comes the hill. I gotta get ready for that one. Here comes the next hill. That last one, I made it up where without a motor, I normally take the switchbacks, which are easier, because I don't want to hurt my knees. I still got a bad right knee. I'm trying to save that knee. But the second hill that I'm going up, that you can see maybe the car's down there, and I'm up here. But the second hill seems to be pretty easy. This first hill that is very, it's steep, and it's a quick, steep hill. I like longer, steeper hills. Those are easier even without a motor. But with the motor, where I normally wouldn't take that, I can. So, well, I think we did it. So I just went over some pretty steep bumps in a parking lot. And the nice thing is with this trike, I'm actually clearing them. So it's not so low that you're scraping on speed bumps. This is Laid Back Mickey for the Laid Back Bike Report, riding the Ice Sprint X Tour. And you gotta ride one. They're pretty cool. So what I have to say from here, peace out.
I think Mickey likes that trike. So thank you, Mickey. Great job on that report. So, okay, folks, let's move along to the sports. And let's bring on the sports director extraordinaire. It's Denny Voorhees. Denny, where are you? Oh, there you go. Hey. And Denny, as usual, we can't hear a word.
And I lost my script. I'm sorry. Did you? Oh, yeah. I just moved it over and it's gone.
All right.
No.
Do you want me to read it for you and you can find it and chip in?
Give me a minute here.
Well, how about we jump to Larry's section and we'll come back to you?
Why don't you do that? Yeah.
All right. Do that. Larry, I am going to take over controls here and find you. There we go. And Denny, I'm put you back for a minute. Larry, are you set to go? I know that's a little bit of a...
Cue the slideshow, skip down to mine.
All right. And let me see where we are with that. The slides are... There we go. And let's go to the beginning of those. Yeah, Trey wasn't quite ready either. Is that the first one?
No.
Now, the first one, back it up. And bear with us, folks. Sorry about that. We need to go to show Wichita intro. There we go. And let me get myself out of here for right now.
You just go full on the slideshow. Okay. So Friday, May 21st through Sunday, May 23rd, was the Wichita Adaptive Sports Kansas Adaptive Cycling Omnium. This was a three-day event, three consecutive days, and each day was a different type of race. Friday was a 15K out-and-back time trial in Ketchy, which is north of town. Saturday was a 24-mile road race in Atlanta, Kansas, southeast of Wichita, and Sunday was a 35-minute crit on a 9/10 mile loop at Lake Afton west of town. Next slide. So here we go. Before the start was a time trial, we gathered around for introductions from the race director, James Watson, his wife, Tammy, and the race official, Vince Kuko. Notice the person in the back there working on a hand cycle. That's Mark Powers of Powers on Cycling. They brought him in. He's very supportive of adaptive cycling, working on all kinds of stuff, and he very much likes and appreciates the military veterans, helping them out, fixing anything, repairing any hand trikes and cycles, any hand trikes and cycles that needed any repair. Next slide. So this is the start of the time trial. We lined up and Vince started us out at specific intervals with the leg power trikes going off first one at a time. Next slide. Then he sent off the hand cycles one at a time right behind us. The weather was pleasant that day and the course was relatively flat. There was a tailwind on the way out and which turns into a headwind coming back. Next slide. So this is kind of confusing. I'm not going to go into details with it, but for the hand cyclist, the 15K time trial is a standardized distance they use to compare against each other. And if they go fast enough in that standard distance, it qualifies them to go on to international competitions and be on national teams and international teams. So for the leg powered trikes, we don't qualify for that kind of stuff. So they stick us in the other categories. If you want, you can read up on the hand cycles. I really don't understand their qualifying procedures. But because of the wind, everybody was frustrated and none of them qualified for the standardized times. Next slide. Next slide. There we go. So the next day on Saturday, There we go. The next day, Saturday, was the road race. So here we're lining up at the start. Nothing formal about where to line up, but the leg-powered cyclists, we kind of just decided to get towards the back and let the faster hand cyclists go at the beginning. The temperature was kind of cool that day, and there was a slight drizzle coming down at the start. So it was kind of confusing what to wear. Some people wore long sleeves and leg warmers and arm warmers. I just went with the shorts and the short sleeves. The group split off into smaller groups just after the first few miles or so. And I found myself working with and pace lining with a few other hand cyclists. We were in a group about 4 to 6 of us at the beginning of that. And then as the miles went on, we kind of dropped off one at a time over a course of about 6 miles or so. And then with about 6 miles to go, there was two of us, and I just couldn't keep up anymore, and I was all by myself, and I finished in about 7th place. Next slide. And so here's the results from the road race. Even though for awards we were racing only against those in our respective categories, notice how everybody's kind of working together, regardless of category, didn't really matter much for the results there. Next slide. Sunday, the last day, was the crit. The weather was overcast and dry and kind of pleasant. Course is a 9/10 mile loop with some twisty turns and then a back straightaway. And here we are lining up. The start was on the straightaway. I lined up near the front, thinking not to be the fastest, but wanted to see how long I could keep up with the lead pack. So we started out. I was about 8th place into the first turn, and the gap started forming right after that. So I passed one and then another. And then there was a group of 2 of us together for a few laps. Next slide. So here's a picture of one of the turns showing a lead motorcyclist out in front of the leaders. This was more fun than I expected. It reminded me of kind of go-kart racing with a lot of twisty turns and then a straightaway. I couldn't stay with the lead pack for very long, but I was able to pass a few. And so then my goal changed from staying with the leaders just to try to not get lapped. On my last lap, the lead motorcycle did pass me right before the finish, but I was able to hold off the lead racers, so I was able to finish on the same lap. Next slide. So here's the results. It's kind of confusing for the officials because he's got to keep track of who's a lap down and how many laps and who's on the current laps. And it just goes and goes and goes until he says one lap to go at a certain time, which was 35 minutes. Next slide. Since I know a lot of people like to ask about what trikes people are on, there was a Greenspeed Aero, a Cat Trike Dumont, 2 Cat Trike 700s, and a Cat Trike Speed. Sorry, I don't know all the specs on the hand cycles. Next slide. So they put all the results together. You get 10 points if you get first place in your category and so on. And it all accumulates like that. Vince did a great job putting all that together. So back to me now. So, and as a award for first place in the open division, they put all the powered trikes or leg powered trikes in the other category. This was what I was awarded. And at the very end, after the last awards were given out, Mark Powers from the Tennessee shop, he showed up and gave out a bunch of shirts and shorts and gloves and all that. And so I got this hat.
A nice ice track trikes hat. Very nice. It looks like he had a lot of fun, yeah?
Oh, yeah. So in summary, I know this is kind of like a review segment, so I kind of review events. So I had a lot of fun. It's not a grueling endurance thing. It's a lot of 3 days of short races, and it's very welcoming to recumbents. There's no upright cycles. It's just recumbents and hand cycles, and it's in Kansas, centrally located. And that's 3 days in May.
Very nice.
And that's it. Back to you, Gary.
All right. So I'm going to put Denny back up, and I'll let you take back over on the directing. Denny, what do you think? Are you ready to go at this point?
Oh, yeah.
And let's see if Trey's got the slides reset? Do you have? Yep, he sure does. Okay. All right, let's pop up that first slide and let's start there. Go ahead.
Hey, very good job, Larry, and congratulations on holding off all the rest of them. 30 out of 30 points is pretty good. The first results of the Maryland Endurance Challenge held May 22nd in Emmitsburg, Maryland. The course had a 34.2-mile loop and a 6.6-mile short loop. The 12-hour racers needed to ride the long loop three times before transitioning to the short loop to finish out the 12 hours. The first 100 miles was almost 3,500 feet of climbing, not exactly a flat course. There were three timed races, a 3-hour, a 6-hour, and a 12-hour. This is the third year the 12-hour race was also the World Ultra Cycling Association's U.S. National 12-Hour Championship. The 3- and the 6-hour races had no recumbents entered, but the 12-hour race had three of them, all of them in the 60 to 69 age group. In third place, Jeffrey Ritter with 148.5 miles. In second place, Rick Moore with 174.37 miles. And in first place in the 2021 National Road Champion, a national champion of the World Ultra Cycling Association's 12-hour race, is Ronald Thompson with 177.7 miles. That's in the recumbent division. Congratulations to those finishers. Next up, I'm pleased to report there will be a recumbent entered in this year's Race Across the West. The Race Across the West is a 945-mile race inside the Race Across America, and it is considered to be a stepping stone for the long-running 3,000-mile race. This year, 29-year-old Caleb Klein, a team Rusty Dog of War, and the team is Rusty Dogs of War, will be riding a Bichetta Carbon 2.0 trike. He will challenge the 945-mile course from Oceanside, California to Durango, Colorado. Caleb is a disabled military veteran, and his crew are also military veterans or family members. If he finishes, it will be the first trike to ever complete the course. The team will be raising money for several charities. Check out his profile on the Ram Racers roster. The race starts June 15th, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in Oceanside. I'll be going out there and working on the officiating team this year. It's great to see that most of the endurance races have returned this season. Don't forget to check out your local senior games events to see if they're allowing recumbents. And so until next time, stay on the bike and keep moving forward. Back to you, Gary.
Great, Danny. Thank you. Now, I have since been in touch, as you know. Well, first of all, the winner of the national championship, Ronald Thompson, contacted me. He's actually the one that supplied that nice podium shot of him up there, which is great. And he also is an interesting builder, so we may be seeing more from Ronald Thompson.
Excellent.
And Caleb Klein, also the guy that's going to do the raw ride that you're going to see. Very nice fella, and I was chatting with him, and I think he may come on and talk about the raw ride and what he does with the veterans as well on a future show in next month or so. So we look forward to that. You really hunted down, found a couple of interesting fellas to talk about, Denny. So thank you for that. Thanks for the sports report.
Well, you bet. My pleasure.
All right. So we will see you next month. All right. Let me zip down on my script here and go on to our sponsors. This show is sponsored by TerraCycle. From fairings to headrests, whatever accessory you need, Pat and crew, they have you covered. And Trailside Trikes. If you find yourself in Florida, near the Withlacoochee Trail, or in Knoxville, Tennessee, check out Andrew's shop and his amazing crew. And Cruise Bike. Their patented race and record-proven front-wheel drive geometry changes the rules of cycling. Now, comfort doesn't come at the cost of performance. But fair warning, your cheeks may hurt from smiling. And TerraTrike and Greenspeed Trikes. Your vision, whatever it is, TerraTrike has a trike to take you there. And Greenspeed cutting-edge designs create performance through Aussie ingenuity and Laidback Cycles, the top USA dealer for TerraTrike and the premier source for CatTrike, Ice, and Greenspeed. We give you the freedom to ride. And Recumbent CycleCon. Please join us at the 2021 Recumbent CycleCon trade show and convention. It will be held October 9th and 10th at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Dayton, Ohio. More info at recumbentcyclecon.com. All right, folks, please support our sponsors. They are wonderful. They keep us going every month. So, all right, next month, the show will be July 11th at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Working on quite a few interesting things. Don't have anything to announce just yet, but please tune in for the July show. Now, how can you support the Laid Back Bike Report? You can like us on Facebook, subscribe to us on YouTube, and you can learn a lot more about us by clicking on that little white eye up there. It'll take you right to the Laid Back Bike Report website where you can find past shows and what we got coming up, all kinds of great stuff there. So please do that. There's an applause button right down over here. You might want to hit that. You can click the thumbs up. That would be very nice. And the best thing you can do if you really want to support us is to head over to patreon.com, become one of our Patreon patrons like these guys right here. You can do so for as little as $1 a month. All right, guys, let's say our final goodbyes and thank yous. Bring the panel up if you would, Larry. I think we talked to most everyone, but is Peter still with us? Yeah, I saw him in there. Hey, Peter, I can't hear you if you're there, but we're glad that you're with us. Guys, thank you so much.
Oh, there I am.
There you are. We appreciate you hopping in there, Peter. We appreciate all you guys helping us out. Great questions, great support as always. So, guys, these are the people that make this all possible. Work very hard every month to put together this great show for you. So thank you all. All right, let's finish it up. I appreciate you guys watching us every month and supporting us like you do. So until our next webcast, from all of us here at the Laid Back Bike Report, so long, Bent Riders.